Everyone said nay. Are you all looking forward to next week? Yes? Are you sure next week will come? You seem to be sure that next week's going to come. So what are you going to be doing differently next week then? That you're not planning on doing this week? Practice. Come to the monastery and practice the path, practice the Dhamma. So what do you do the other weeks then? Something different. Just be a little bit more casual. But next week you're going to fasten the seatbelts, right? Put your best gear on. I want all of us to get to a point where the time of day, the day of the week, the time of the year, none of these things matter. Where your focus on your Nibbana is so sharp and so crystal clear that the circumstances in which you find yourselves has no bearing on your practice. That is when you can know for yourself that the Buddha, the Dhamma and the Sangha have truly been instilled within your own minds. See, initially, when you begin to practice on this path, you look for the right environment to do it. You look for the environment. Now, do you remember when you want to meditate? If you ever tried this at home, like from time to time people are really interested in meditation. Like they hear it either, they read about it, they hear it on the, watch it on TV, or someone says that it's good to do some meditation. And then typically what's the first thing you do? I'll tell you what people typically tend to do. Not you, people. They go and find themselves a meditation cushion or a proper pillow. And just about any old pillow doesn't work for that. You have to have a special pillow for that. So then you have to go shopping for that. Do you remember when you decided to go to the gym? Right? And you went 1 week. But that didn't stop you from buying yourself some gym shoes, right? And so when people want to do some meditation, they go and buy themselves some, like a meditation pillow or a meditation cushion. And then they buy some candles. Nice scented candles. Maybe some potpourri. Right? Just to have the right ambience. Yeah. Then you need the mood, the lighting. To get the right mood, or to get into the right mood. And then you have to shut everyone else out. You have to isolate yourself in a room somewhere. And then you have to do a big hoo-ha and tell everyone, you know, I'm going to meditate right today, so don't you come bother me. Right? I'm going to be in meditation mode. You're trying to zone in, right? So everything else has to shut. Like the whole world has to know that you're going to meditate now. Everyone has to know about this. I mean, that's okay. But the problem is, what if the world's not ready for you to meditate? What if the world doesn't want you to meditate? Now just think about it for a second. Right, among you are doctors, engineers, lawyers, teachers, mothers, fathers, right? People who have responsibilities and duties and obligations towards society. What do you think they want you to do all day? Meditate? I'm a monk. Right? So typically people will expect either for me to preach the Dhamma, maybe go to a pirit chanting once in a while, maybe do a pansakula, maybe go on alms, right, or accept an alms invitation, and meditate. But that's because I'm a monk. This lifestyle, or this way of life that I have chosen permits me and allows me and gives me the freedom to do that. Whereas in your lives, that is going to be incredibly difficult. Unless perhaps you're a meditation master or a teacher or someone, and your job is to teach people to meditate, that's not what people are going to want you to do. Go to your workplace and ask your boss, Right? I've decided to take a sabbatical. I'm going to take the next 2 weeks off because I want to meditate. What do you think your boss is going to say? Because people don't want that from you. Here's what people want you to do. Get to work on time. File that report on time. Speak to the customers. Speak to your clients. Right? Sign that new business deal. Go negotiate. Research. Develop the country or whatever. Develop the business. Right? Work for your company. Solve these problems. That's what they want you to do. As a mother, do you think your children would want you to meditate all day long? If they do, then you're a very fortunate mother. If your children are quite happy for you to be meditating all day long, then your children don't belong at home. Bring them to the monastery. So that's not what society expects of you. They have a different agenda for you. When you don't have your own agenda, you fall into someone else's agenda. Don't you agree? I'm someone who found my agenda. I didn't have one at the beginning. So when I came into this world, I looked around me and asked my folks, I asked my family, I asked my friends, I asked my neighbors, relations and all of them, what am I supposed to do? Que sara sara. What am I supposed to do? And they all had these set agendas. And so conveniently, they found a slot for me in their agendas. That's what they did. My mom had an agenda for me and she found the places for me to slot into that. As I narrate my own story, ask yourself whether that was not the true, that was not the same for you. My father had the same. He wanted me to become a doctor. So he had a set agenda. And they were, you know, like any, or like a script. In a script, say there's a dialogue in a script. Right? So my father had things that he would do and there were things that I was supposed to do. Of course, in his script, they also had things that my mother had to do and my little brother had to do. So, because I didn't come into this world with my own script, I fell into someone else's script. That's what they say, right? If you don't have a plan, then you are following someone else's plan. You become a pawn in someone else's plan. This is what happened with me. So the same must have happened and the same is probably still happening with you. But we need to know what our agenda is. Once you discover that you only came into this world not to be a mother or a father or a doctor or an engineer or a lawyer or anyone like that, and you just came into this world to discover happiness that is within you, now all those scripts fall apart. They fall into tatters. Then you simply do your obligations, your duties, because that is of course something that we all have to do as human beings, as citizens in this who live in this world, there's a certain amount of duties and responsibilities that we have to serve and rightfully do for everyone. But besides that, our agenda of achieving an unconditional happiness and then helping others to achieve the same, that is now my script. That's my script. So no one's going to object to me wanting to do meditation. Now, see, next week you'll all be, at least most of you will be at the monastery. Why do I have to say most of you? What about the rest of you? Why do I have to say most of you? What about the rest of you? Is it that you don't want to come? Is it? No, it's not that you don't want to come. It's that you just cannot come. Why? Because you have a part to play in someone else's script. That's the deal. That's the deal. That's okay. You have to do what you have to do. But remember, please do remember that you have to do what you have to do. And that I mean in a different sense. You have to do what you have to do. I get that. But don't forget that you have to do what you have to do. Do you understand that the two mean, although the same words mean two different things? Yeah. So next week I'll be expecting, looking forward to seeing as many of you as possible at the monastery. We have a a good day planned where you'll get some time to meditate. You will get a bunch of a couple of sermons at the least, and you will also get some time to sit down in small groups and check your understanding. That is going to be the most important thing of all of what you're going to be doing next week. In fact, I think even Guru Handra would agree that that is going to be far more productive for you than his sermon. I think Guru Handra would say the same. That is to sit down with the other Swamin Mahanses, with some of our Anagarika Mahatmyas, and check your understanding of the Dhamma. We will try to arrange that opportunity. Not try to, we will arrange that opportunity for you. So everyone who will walk through our gates on that day, if you're going to be there, we will put you into little groups. So they won't be too large where you can't actually check your knowledge. So you will have the opportunity to ask questions about what we've learned here. Right? If you don't understand some of the things we're going to be talking about today, if you don't understand how vexation happens, why we say that pleasure is something that you should fall out of love with, why we continue to say that pleasure is not what you should be going after in life, although it seems pleasurable, it is not what you need in your life. If you don't understand the difference between pleasure and real happiness, if right now and still these two things seem the same to you, although Swaminathan keeps referring to them as two different things, right? These are things that you would have to check, ask questions and clarify. Make sure that when you leave the monastery next week, you walk away having understood clearly what your task is as a human being. What you have come into this world for. What your purpose is as a human being. What life is for. Make sure that you leave next week having understood that. Like I said last week, here I'm only a preacher. I cannot be a teacher. Because that teaching has to happen on a more on more of an individual level. That is why at the monastery we have a number of different programs, as many of you will know. That's why those who first take those first steps in the sasana, start walking, you start listening to the Dhamma, and then gradually you start joining the various programs that we have to offer. And for the gentlemen, we have the Sila Shravaka program. For the ladies, we have the Sila Shravaka and the Sila Uvesi programs, depending on how much time you have and you can commit towards your salvation. So, have in the back of your mind, when you come next week, how can I invest a little bit more of my life in my own salvation? Nothing more. Nothing more. I always tell people, when you come into the monastery, walk in empty-handed. You don't need to bring anything with you, besides maybe a water bottle. You don't need to bring anything else with you. Our purpose, what we are trying to do, is to actually give the gift of the sasana, give the gift of unconditional happiness to human beings. If my happiness was dependent on what you do for me, then that cannot be true happiness, can it? If you have me coming here every week and saying, devotees, please come to the sasana, come and listen to the Dhamma, but when you do, you know, make sure you bring a robo too. Make sure you offer some alms or you know, do something like that for the sasana. For me, then my happiness is still conditional. It is not so. The sasana is the only place where there is no expectation. There's only giving without an expectation. Because sasana is unconditional happiness. When happiness is unconditional, there's nothing that is expected, only given. The more you understand the sasana, the more you'll understand what I mean by these words. And that these words are the truth and nothing but the truth. So next week when you come, I want you to walk away having discovered the purpose of your life. If you are 50 years of age by now, perhaps the last 50 years you've spent not really having discovered why you lived those last 50 years. Perhaps. That is why you're still confused. You're still confused. You're 50. I mean 50 long years. That's 5 decades of your life and you're still confused. Confused how? You don't know what makes you happy. You don't know what makes you unhappy. You don't know what's going to put you into grief. You don't know why you're sad. You don't know why you're disappointed. You don't know why you get annoyed. And you can't stop yourself from, you can't stop that from happening to you. Your children still annoy you. Your neighbors still bother you. Your other half, right, he or she is poorly. And in a few years' time, you know, they're going to pass away and you don't know what to do after that with your life. You feel restless sometimes. You feel anxious. You feel guilt. You feel pain. You feel the burden of life. Right? Midlife crisis, all these things. 50 years you've lived. What have you gained? These are the questions that you have to ask yourselves, ladies and gentlemen. But all is not lost because you still have the gift of life with you. When is it too late to come across the Dhamma? When is it too late to come across the Dhamma? It's never too late. It's only too late if you don't come across the Dhamma. Then it's too late. That's why I always tell myself, how fortunate you must all be. Look at where we've all come from. You've all come from many different walks of life. Right? Among us, we will have the rich and the poor. We'll have those who are very influential and those who just keep to themselves. We have people who represent all walks of life, all corners of the globe, both listening to us here and as well as online. It's picking up pace, people tell me. That people from all corners of the globe, they're still starting to tune in to these talks. It's nothing special about the talk, it's the teaching. Because this is what people are looking for. The drug addicts are looking for this. The sex addicts are looking for this. The TV addicts are looking for this. The music addicts are looking for this. The game addicts are looking for this. The cricket addicts are looking for this. The golf addicts are looking for this. The rugby addicts are looking for this. Yes or no? They're looking for this. The alcohol addicts are looking for this. Right from substance addicts to people who are just addicted to living. Aren't you addicted to living? Aren't you? Addicted to being alive? You'd pay any price for that, won't you? To be alive? See, once you've dropped all those other addictions, one will still remain. The addiction to being alive. I have to be alive. People are so addicted to being alive that every time a new chitta arises, you create within it the sense of being alive. That is the nature of that addiction. Any newcomers today? Give me a show of hands. Welcome. Thank you. That thank you was not to you, it was thank you for the people who brought you here. It is there you have to thank. Someone sent you a link. Someone said, I've got a spare seat in the car, why don't you hop in there, give a free sandwich at the end of the day. Someone used their friendship to manipulate you. They said, hey, you're my friend, right? I've never asked you for a favor. Just do this one thing for me. Next Sunday, come with me to the Gateway College. They manipulated you. You will shortly realize that it was only for your own good. There are two kinds of manipulation that people do. One is vile and vicious and wicked. That kind of manipulation ends you in the four great hells. Then there's another kind of manipulation. It's when you inspire someone and motivate someone to do what is good for them. That kind of manipulation ends you in the Sugati, in the heavens. What did Jesus Christ do? He manipulated people. He showed people God. He gave the message of God. He showed people that people should love and be compassionate towards all. And in doing so, people took on the message. They listened to him. They took those who listened to the message started to change their lives. And they went to paradise. The same is true with all religions, with any philosophy that encourages people to be good, that encourages people to do good things, look after each other, love and share and care. This is what humanity stands for. Only good people will ultimately get to Nibbana. You can't jump from bad to Nibbana. There's another stepping stone, and that is to be good. You're all good people, and good people have brought you here. If you haven't realized that yet, you will very soon. When you begin to realize that all those addictions that you have, here is the answer. Every fear that keeps you up at night, every worry that keeps you from falling asleep at night. Yes, your fears keep you up at night. Your worries keep you from falling asleep. They keep you up at night. And then there are those that you dread. You dread the following day. Some of you dread waking up the following morning because you know that something bad news is just around the corner. And then you hope that the next day doesn't come. There are some who can't wait for the next day, and then there are others who don't want the next day. These are the two kind of people you have in life. So therefore, time is always your enemy. Don't you realize that? Isn't time your enemy? See, either time keeps you from something you want, or time takes away something you want. This is the curse of wanting. The moment you make friends with wanting, in that moment, you make enemies with time. Yes or no? The moment you make friends with wanting, in that moment, you make enemies with time. Because whatever you want, what's the gap between your wanting and you acquiring it? What's that gap called? Time. And once you've acquired it, what does time do now? Work against you. See? It always works against you. It always works against you. I'll give you an example. There's a cake in the oven. Alright? There's a cake in the oven. Now, what's working against you? What do you want to happen as soon as possible? The cake to be ready. So it's baked, so you can eat it. What's keeping you from eating it? The big T. What's it called? Time. Right? So now, the oven goes ting. You open it, you take the cake. Now it's with you. What's time going to do now? Just leave it like that and watch it. Put a clock next to it, right? As the hours, the minutes turn into hours, what's going to happen to the cake? Well, whatever is left of it, if the others don't have their way with it, what's going to happen? It's going to rot. It's going to spoil. So what's time doing now? It's taking what you want away from you, right? So people try to beat time. That's the wrong battle. No one's ever tried to fight time and won. No one. And here's why. Time is an illusion. You can't fight an imaginary person and win. You can't fight an imaginary enemy and win. If I asked you to come forward right now, right, and I said, pretend that there was someone stood next to you, an imaginary person, and now fight that person. When do they die? When can you knock them down, unconscious? Your task is to keep them there because you have to imagine that they're there. Okay? So when do you knock them unconscious? When you give them a knockout punch? It never happens because your task is to keep them there. Right? So if it's an imaginary entity, it'll always be there for as long as who's there? You are there. So for as long as you are there, time will always be there. So time is not your enemy because it's an imaginary entity. Your enemy is desire, is wanting things. When you want things, now this imaginary entity of time starts to act against you. Because when you want something, time will either be the gap between you not having it and acquiring it, or the moment you acquire it. See, the moment you acquire it, it'll be the force that takes it away from you. So it's never your friend. Time is never your friend. But then you're looking forward to your birthday. Perhaps you have your birthday around the corner. Maybe your boss, your manager has promised you that you're going to get your promotion at the end of the year. Right? You're looking towards the end of the year so you get your bonus. Someone's promised to take you out tonight. So you're looking forward to this evening. Your child, he or she's gone abroad and they're coming back tonight. So you're looking forward to receiving them at the airport. You're going to buy a new car. You've paid the deposit and you're collecting it this evening. Or tomorrow. Today's Sunday, tomorrow's Monday. Tomorrow you go to the showroom and you're going to drive out of that showroom with a brand new spanking brand new car. You're looking forward to that. Who's your enemy now? Time, right? Time. So what do big companies like Amazon do? They do just-in-time delivery. Well, they come up with agile ways of working. They try and reduce the time that it takes between you wanting something and acquiring something, so that they seem like they're your friend. And here's me saying, wanting is your problem. Who do you love more, Swaminarayan or Amazon? Think about it. You only see me once a week, but you have the app on your phone. You put your feet up in the evening, right? Have a nice cup of hot chocolate, and you're browsing on Amazon, right? Scrolling through what might pique your interest next to see what you can order. Instant. And so when companies make it easier for you to acquire the things that you want, when they make it instant noodles, what else do you have? Now you can have an instant partner. Yeah, instant partners. You can have instant blah, blah, blah. You have instant everything these days. Technology is so advanced. Remember those days when, I remember when I was young, I'll forget to precept you now, remind me, okay, in a moment. When I was younger, I remember, I was a big fan of Amaradeva and Nanda Malini, and so I was I loved classical music. So there was a time when I wanted to, that was just after we come back from the UK, no, that was before my trip to the UK, I was living somewhere else, and when I got back, now my father, I acquired this taste from my father. At night he used to put these cassettes on, and that's what I used to fall asleep to. Those were the lullabies that drifted me into sleep. Amaradeva and Nanda Malini and so on. So when I came to Sri Lanka, I wanted to get those songs that I had fallen in love with into some kind of medium that I could listen to whenever I wanted it. But back then, you had to go to a record bar. Nowadays, all you have to do is go online, right? It's at the tip of your fingers. Any song that has been produced to date is at the tip of your fingers, isn't it? Those things called smartphones that you have in your pockets, that you have in your hands, what they have done is they've reduced the size of this enemy that you think is your enemy, time. Everyone's fighting with time. They've picked the wrong battle, ladies and gentlemen. That's what I'm trying to show you here. They've picked the wrong battle. They're fighting with time. So I used to go to a record. I had to go to a record bar, and then I had to give them a list of all the songs that I wanted. And then I said, "When can I have it?" He said, "Come back in 2 weeks." You know what? And then I did go back in 2 weeks, and they were closed for the day. So then I had to go back in again to collect the tape. Now can you imagine me coming back in the bus, coming back home and wanting to put it into the cassette player and want to listen to those songs? That time, I felt, was a real menace. I didn't realize that the problem was with me. I thought time was the problem. So, of course, that call was answered. Technology heard my calls, heard my voice, and it came up with a solution. And so it gave us the internet. And now we have our smartphones with us. So now if there's any song that is ever sung, even before it makes a debut album somewhere, right? Someone somewhere, they're just doing it for fun. It's just a hobby. They produce a track and they put it online and you can access it. What have they done? They've reduced time. They try and compact that as much as they possibly can. Now when you want to eat something, you don't have to cook it. Because if you have to cook it, you have to go shopping for the ingredients. And then you have to wait until the market's open. Right? You have to wait until the shop's open. You have to wait until the grocery's open. So just imagine if you wanted to have a pizza now. If you wanted to have a pizza now and there was no delivery service, you couldn't order such things online, what would you have to do? Then you have to wait at least until the end of this sermon. At least until the end of this sermon. And then on your way home, you'd have to go pick up a few things and then take them home, cook it, and then at least it'll be this evening before you can have it. But now, you don't have to even wait until the end of this sermon. Any volunteers who would like to prove that to us? Just take your phones out. There's an app for that. Right? Pick your... Oh, you'll remember the last thing you ordered. It'll be in your favorites list. And you have already saved your card details, right? Yeah, so you don't have to even carry your card. So maybe three clicks. One to open the app, two to select your favorite item, and three to order. GPS coordinates will tell them exactly where you are. And in 45 minutes, the pizza will be out there, waiting for you to collect it. Because who's the enemy? Time's the enemy, isn't it? Yes. See how advanced we are as a human race. Don't you feel that humans have lost the plot? This is why science keeps on advancing. Because people have lost the plot. That's why. It is because people have lost the plot, science keeps on advancing. It is not something for us to be proud of. If you go back a few generations, ladies and gentlemen, people didn't have all the luxuries, all the comforts that we have today. But guess what? They were, complete the sentence, happier. They were happier. Ask your grandmother if she's still alive. If she's still alive, go ask your grandmother. Achyamma, did you have all these things that we have today? Did you have a smartphone? Did you have a color TV at home? Did you have all these gadgets that we have today? She said, no, I don't have any of this. So, surely then you must have been, life must have been really miserable, right? She said, no. Don't take my word for it, go ask her if she's still alive. Some of you may be fortunate to have your great-grandmothers alive still. Go ask them. But the life wasn't simpler back then. But where was the technology? See, when you have science, you don't need technology. When you don't have science, you need technology. By science, I mean vidya. Vidya of the padi. Aloko Udapadi. When you have the science of the mind, you don't need technology. But when you fall into avidya, That is a lack of science, the science of the mind, the science of happiness. Now you become reliant on technology, because technology is the force that is there out there that brings you the things that you want in the shortest period of time, in the most convenient way. I know these things are not going to change the world and we'll just keep on advancing. Just, you know, if you are going to hang around for the next 10 years, if you're going to hang around for the next 20, 30 years, you would not be able to, you know, today you can't even imagine what the world is going to look like in the next 50 years' time. Most of us will not be there to find out. Certainly not in this guise, we will be in a different guise, if your plan is to come back again. So I can say one thing for sure, if my plan works out, I will not know what the world is going to look like in 50 years' time. Read between the lines. If my plan works out, right, I will not know what the world is going to look like after the next 50 years' time. I'm 30-something now. In 50 years' time, I'll be 80. If I'm still going to be alive by that time, I might just about see what's happening out there in my bedroom, because I won't be able to go out anywhere. I'll be too weak for any of that. So really, I won't really know what's going on out there. But if my plan works out, I won't be coming back to find out what's happened and what's happening. But we will not, you know, today we can't even imagine what it's going to look like. The world is going to be a very different place. But here's what I can tell you about it. So this is a prophecy for the future. When that day you tell, Swaminathan said that this would happen. Technology will be super advanced. The feats that technology will be able to achieve are just beyond our wildest imaginations. But here's what else will have happened. People will have lost their humanity. There's a lot of talk about whether robots are going to take over the world with artificial intelligence and all that. You don't need robots to take over the world. People will have become robots. People will become robots. People will have lost love, compassion, kindness, tolerance, patience. They'll have lost that. And nothing I say can change that. Nothing I do can change that. That's why I always keep saying, we are not here to change the world. The world will go at its own rate. It'll do what it's going to do, and what's going to happen will happen. I can't change the whole world for you, ladies and gentlemen, but I can change your whole world. I can help change your world. Because people will be sick and tired of waiting for things to happen, they will keep on investing time and money to try and find ways to shorten the time between wanting and acquiring. Because that seems like a real plague, time. People just hate time. They hate time. People hate time. What are the two things that time does? It either avoids you or prevents you or delays you from having something you want. Or once you've acquired it, then what does time do? It takes it away from you. When is time ever your friend? When is time ever your friend? It is never. That's why the Dhamma, one of the virtues, one of the qualities of the Dhamma is akaliko. To become independent of time, you have to be independent of attachment. When there is nothing you want, when there is nothing you desire, when there is nothing you wish for, when there is nothing you are longing for, then time cannot hurt you. See, you could you could walk away, you could go and hide, you could go and run and hide and take shelter from the biggest, boldest, most fearsome enemy that you can imagine. Whoever that might be. Just think of a person you really don't like, but you just absolutely despise them. You probably don't have people like that in your life anymore, but just imagine a hypothetical situation, person, you really don't like them. See, you can keep your distance from them. Okay, ex-husband. But you can distance yourself from them. Right? If they're in one country, you can go to another country. If they're still following you, you can go to the moon, right? Whatever. You can go 6 feet under and then hide from them. You can do something to distance yourself from them and just keep your distance. You can get, what do they call them, courts? What's that? When they rule that you have to keep a certain distance from someone? What's it called? Restraining order. Yes? Yes, thank you. You can get a restraining order so that they're not allowed to come within a certain distance from you. They have to maintain the distance. They can't come into your proximity. But once you have run away from all your enemies, one still remains. Who's that? Time. Where do you run to escape time? Where do you go and hide to escape time? Wherever you go, it's like your shadow, always with you. That's why the Dhamma is akalika. There is no other philosophy, there is no other doctrine in this whole universe that can show you how to be free of the enemy of time. Have I convinced you enough? If there's something you like, time's your enemy. If there's something you don't like, time's still your enemy. You like to be among your friends and family. Yes? Well, time's your enemy then. Because what does time do? Keeps you away from them. Delays you being with them. You're looking forward to seeing your children this evening. See? This evening. What does that mean? Until this evening, time's your enemy. Now, your children come to you. So this is evening now, and your children, you see them at home. Now what does time do? Time doesn't stop, does it? So the following morning, you have to go to work, and they have to go to school. Or they have to get married, and they have to leave home. And if everything, once all is said and done, now they have to die. Or you have to die. See? So how do you beat time? You can't. There's only one way. The Buddha gave the prescription for that. Svakkhato, Bhagavata Dhammo. The Bhagavatam says Dhamma. Svakkhato, Bhagavata Dhammo, Sandittiko, Akaliko, Ehipassiko, Opanaiko, Pachattang Veditabbo, Vinyohi. The only remedy for the curse of time. The only remedy. What a sublime philosophy the Buddha's teaching is. How relevant it is to all sentient beings, don't you think? You know, now that I've just explained to you how time is a curse, tell me, is it only a problem to Buddhists? Is it only a problem to Buddhists? So only Buddhists should become akaliko. What do you think? Is it not a problem to Muslims? Time? Is it not a problem to Christians? Is it not a problem to the Jews? Is it not a problem to the atheists? Or people who are non-religious? People who don't identify themselves as belonging to a particular religion? People who believe in science? And science is their religion? Is time not a curse to them? Didn't Thomas Alva Edison say that I had to try to invent the light bulb 999 times until I discovered how to make it? So that 999 times, how do you think he was doing? happy? Can you imagine the state of his mind? Each time that experiment failing, just imagine what he was going through. Because he wanted something, right? And when you want something, you can't help but vex. You can't help but stress out. You know when you want some grades for your exams. You know when you're waiting for your exam. You know when you're doing your exam. You know when you're waiting for your results. You want to find out whether you're pregnant or not. Then you get a test done. Right? What is your curse now? What's your biggest enemy? Time. Then you realize you are pregnant. You've conceived. Right? Then the next 9 months is what? Is it a blessing or a curse? It's a curse. You know this. Because now there's something you want. Do you want the 9 months to become 15, or do you want the 9 months to become 9 days if possible, so you can see your child? Because that's why you wanted to become a mother, not so that you can be pregnant for 9 months, right? Oh, is that what you wanted? You wanted to be a mother. You wanted to hold your child in your hand. All right, 9 months have gone, so that curse is done now. The child is in your hand. Who's your enemy now? Speak up, mothers. Who's your enemy now? Huh? Time. Because what do you want your child to be? Always a child. She's a baby, right? You know that she's not going to be so innocent ever again. You know that she's not going to be so cute and cuddly ever again. Because what's maturing her? What's going to take her away from you? Time. Mothers, fathers who have children, have had children, you know what I'm talking about. See? You ask someone out and you're waiting for them to give you an answer. You're on one knee. Right? You're looking like this. She's looking at you. You're looking at her. She's looking at you. What's the curse right now? What's your curse right now? T-I-M-E. Yeah, the answer is actually in the word itself. T-I-M-E. Yes. That's what time has done to you. It has tied me. Tie me. It's tied you to samsara. That's what time has done. It's tied you. Tie me. That is not a nirukti. So you're on one knee, you're waiting for her to give you an answer. Your curse is what? Time. You know, people in the audience, you've been here, been there, done that. You've been there. You know what I'm talking about. And then eventually she says, I don't know, what did she say? Huh? If she says no, she says no. Now what do you want her to say? Yes. So you have to now continue to work at it, right? So you have to continue to work at it to somehow get her to give you a yes. So what's your curse now? Time. Okay, she says yes. Now what's the next thing you want to do? Now she's accepted your proposal, right? You've given her the engagement ring. Next, what's the next thing you want to do? You want to tie the knot. So, what's the curse now? Time. So, you have to plan for the wedding. Right, so the big day is now a week away. The week turns into days, right? And now it's the following day. So, the wedding is tomorrow. So there's a day's worth of time that's keeping you from being with your loved one. What's the curse again? Time. Now the day passes, day turns into hours, hours into minutes, and now you're on the porua, So now you are there. And now the Kabhumataya comes. They do the Ashtaka and all that. They put the string around your little fingers. They pour the holy water. See, I didn't fall off this from the sky. I know these things, okay? I know a thing or two. I've lived there, done that, bought the t-shirt. I've been to the gig. I know what it's like. Right? So, been through all that. So, I know that. So, now that waiting is done. Because now you have acquired the most precious thing that you've always wanted. And now she or he is with you. So now you're glad that all that time that you had waited has passed away and now you can be with the person for the rest of your... Say that again. For the... Forever, right? For the rest of your life. What is that again? In one word? In one word? Time. When is time your friend? Then why the heck do you carry something that always keeps reminding you what it is on your wrist? Huh? Isn't that the thing that keeps reminding you what took your mother away from you? The thing that keeps reminding you that what took your child away from you? The thing that you have on your wrist? Isn't that the thing that just keeps reminding you what took your happiness away from you? What took your life away from you? What took your wife away from you? I've become timeless. You're still bound to time. There's only one remedy. Svakkhato bhagavata dhammo sandittiko akaliko. You can't beat time that way. Because time is an illusion in your mind. To kill time, you have to kill yourself. Kill your self. The sense of self that you feel within you, you kill that and you kill time. The sense of self is what gives you the perception of existence. And the moment you feel that you exist on the dimension of time. Time is the platform on which the train of your existence runs. Oh, that's the track. That's the track. If existence were a train, then time would be the track. When is a track no longer required? When you no longer have a what? A running train. That's when you no longer want it. For as long as you have a train and that train has errands to run, places to go, you will always need a track. Because now that's why you have this on your wrist, so you can keep track. You can keep track of what? There you go. That's your life tracker. And now they come in various varieties. They call them smart watches now. Don't they? Whenever the things around you are getting smarter, what? Okay, let me give an analogy. First, you go into the hospital because you have a runny nose. Okay? They take you into the OPD. And the doctor consults you. And he says, okay, it's nothing too serious. Here's a little prescription, collect it from the pharmacy on your way out. Right? So it's not the full bells and whistles, it's just the OPD. You try and take that medicines, but it doesn't do you any good. You're not healed, and it just keeps getting worse. The following, after a few weeks, you're taken back to the hospital. So now this time round, someone has to walk you in. Last time, you went by yourself. This time, someone has to walk you in. And they take you into a consultation room, and then now you're in the ward. Right, so the doctor says, now you have to take a little bit more, you have to be given a little bit more medical attention, so now you're in the ward. So the nurses are coming to you, they're taking blood samples and urine samples and phlegm samples and all sorts of samples from you. Right now they're doing a little bit more intensive investigations. Are you happier than when you were in the OPD? Are you happier now? So you know, you open your eyes and you see that previously it was just the OPD, now it's the ward. When you take the two and compare the two, are you happy that you are now in the ward and previously you could just be serviced at the OPD? Or is it the other way around? I mean, which would you rather be? A patient who can be treated at the OPD or a patient who has to be treated in the ward? Which one would you rather be? In the OPD, right? Because if you have to be taken into the wards now, your condition has become more serious. Right, okay, 2 weeks pass, and now they rush you into the ICU. Where would you rather be, ICU or the ward? This is a general ward, right? And even better than that would be the OPD, right? So the technology around you is getting more and more advanced. Initially, you were just in the OPD. What technology did you have? Hardly anything at all. Then you were taken into the wards. Now, the technology around you. By technology, I don't mean just the equipment. I mean the nurses, the doctors, all of that. Support systems, support mechanisms. Right? That's been taken up one notch. Now you're in the ICU. Now you have the full bells and whistles. Because you're on constant watch. Yeah? Because it's pneumonia. Before it was just a runny nose, now it's pneumonia. So the technology around you has advanced. What does that tell you about the patient? What does that tell you about the patient? The patient has gotten worse. Yeah? All right. Now let's draw an analogy back to technology, actual technology. If the things around you are getting smarter, yes, why are you laughing? If the things around you are getting smarter, the thing that they are surrounding is getting dumber. Yes, precept, thank you. What time is it? Thank you, Madam. If the things around you are getting smarter, then the thing that they are surrounding is getting dumber. That's why if you go speak to your great-grandmother, if you could, she would tell you, my dear child, back then we had very little. We were content. We were happy. We lived a carefree life. We lived every day as it came. We were happy with just being alive for the day. But then today times have changed. And today, although people's lifespans have reduced, here's the irony, although people's actual lifespans have reduced, the time that they want to live has expanded. See, back then, people didn't want to live forever. Because they believed in life after death. They did. There were those who believed that after I die, I'm going to go to heaven. So I just want to live a good life while I'm here. Heaven is my paradise. Heaven is where I want to be. And when I'm there, I can live a much better life than this. But to get there, I have to earn my merits. So they considered life on this human planet as an opportunity, a place where they could basically sow so that they could reap. Buddhists, the same. They realized that they'd come into this world to attain Nibbana. So their ultimate destination was Nibbana, to be extinguished, free from raga, desha and moha. That is what they lived for. That's why the houses that they built back then, today there are no remnants of them. All you have left today are the chaityas, the stupas, things that were meant to last so that the sasana could last. Because the philosophy, the ethos that people used to have back then was, may the sasana live long and prosper so that I can attain Nibbana and disappear. But today, it's all turned upside down. Today, people are not concerned about the sasana. They're not concerned about the hand that feeds them. They're only concerned about them. So today, people build palaces that are meant to last. They will last, far outlast their lifespans. In their minds, people want to live for 200 years, but their actual lifespans have shortened down to 70, 60, going 50. But in their minds, they'd like to live for another 200. Back then, people didn't want to live that long, but they did. The other day, my mother was telling me that she'd gone to see one of her elder sister. She's 109 years old. In the next generation, do you think in my generation we'd be able to boast about such a long life? Or the generation after mine? After yours? No. 60 is doing well, isn't it? I mean, if you're hitting 70, then you're doing remarkably well. In a few years' time, if you hit 75, they'll come and give you a Guinness World Record, or give you a Nobel Prize or something. They will. That is the state of affairs, ladies and gentlemen. So if time is your enemy, it's time you realized that time is not your enemy. You cannot beat time. So pick someone your own size. Alright? Pick someone your own size. How big is time? Give me a smart answer to that. Time is as big as you. That's how big time is. Time is as big as you. If you are big, time is big. Do I mean physically big? Do I? No. I'm talking about your sense of self. If you have a big self, a big ego, time is huge. It's so big, people probably don't even see you. When they look at you, they see your time. Have you seen some people who are so busy? They're always going about, my time, it's my time is more important than your time, my time is more important than everyone else's time, 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 time. All they can talk about is time. They forget to live. They do. Some people, they forget to live. They're so focused and so conscious about saving time that they forget to live. I mean, what is the time for then? You have to ask. But when you become no one, when you become nothing, then how does time track nothing? Can I ever ask you the question, how long did it take to do nothing? Could I ask such a question? I can ask you, how long did it take you to get here from home? Right? That's doing something. How long did it take you to grow to this age? You have an answer. How long did it take you to do nothing? The answer is, no time at all, because time is irrelevant now. it does not apply to the dimension of nothing. Now you see, if you become nothing, if you become no one, then time is no longer on your back. You become free of time. That is why Svakkhato Bhagavata Dhammo Sandiptiko Akaliko. That is the Dhamma we are here to learn, ladies and gentlemen. I realize that this talk has been very philosophical, to be fair. From time to time I go on these, I meander and get lost in things, but it has been a bit philosophical. I understand that. It's probably something you might write on for a thesis, hand it in there for your PhD. But there are very salient and very practical applications of all of this. That's why I gave you a few examples. Think of something for you to think about. But the answer, even though if you've understood that time is now is no longer the enemy, right? The answer is not in you dealing with time now. If you realize that time is not the problem, it is no longer the curse of your life, then look at what is it that causes time, your perception of time. What is it that causes the illusion of time? And that is the sense of self. How in a chitta you give rise to a sense of self. That is why we talk about that in these sermons. How ignorance and attachment gives rise to a sense of self within you. Now that is what Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa means. I incline myself. Namo Tassa Bhagavato. To understand the doctrine. The doctrine that teaches us that all there are aggregations and not entities. That's what Bhagavato means. It helps you to divide, to split, to separate, and to see that these are all aggregations, manifestations of things. Arahato. Having realized that, you become free of the fetters, the bonds that keep you bound to this mental entity. You are free of that. That is what Arahant means. Sammasambuddhassa. Ignorance and attachment is what keeps you to that. Sammasambuddha. To attain to a wisdom, to an enlightenment that frees you from ignorance and attachment so that you can become a chitta that no longer senses the world in terms of entities, but realizes that all there are merely manifestations of things, aggregations that come together, the Panchaskandha. Towards that, I dedicate my life. To that cause, I commit myself. That is what the Namaskara means. So who do we worship when we do that? Who do we worship with the Namaskara? The answer is, it's an invalid question. See how profound your wisdom has become now? From being individuals who used to go to the temple, maybe once a year, once a month, whatever, offer some alms, all good, this is what paved the path for you to get to this point, right? So you must continue doing that. But don't you think that you were merely conventional Buddhists before the Dhamma reached your lives? What do you say? Buddhist for the sake of Buddhism? Buddhist because your parents were Buddhists? Buddhist because your mother said, you asked, mother, who should be, what should I be? She said, be a Buddhist. You're a Buddhist. Okay, I'm a Buddhist. What is a Buddhist? Just be a Buddhist, don't question. There's a Buddha statue, go and offer some flowers, put some water there and say sadhu. Buddhist. I mean, what an insult to the Buddha. Don't you think you've transcended that? Today, you've understood that namaskara, chanting the namaskara, is not actually a veneration that you do to an individual. Because of course, when I was younger, I had this question, if the Buddha's passed away, if he's gone into parinibbana, if he's not even in heaven. I mean, I understood what the Christians do. I got it. I understood what the Muslims do, because God's in heaven. So to bring your hands together, to get down on your knees and pray to him made sense. He's there. But the Buddha? Apparently he's passed into Parinibbana. So now what sense does it make to put my hands together and worship someone who does not even exist? You get my point? So there were the odd occasions when I asked myself, what's the point of being a Buddhist? It makes no sense. I thought this was what blind faith was. Buddhism. Only later did I realize I was not a Buddhist back then. I hadn't come across the teaching. So, ready for namaskara? Right. Let's bring our palms together then. To remind ourselves of that worthy cause, what we are here to do, what we are here to achieve. Let us also remind ourselves that there was once a great man who walked the surface of this earth, who understood this profound teaching, who realized it all by himself, and then he taught it to all of us. Today we follow in his footsteps, aspiring to achieve the ultimate realization and the bliss that he taught that each and every one of us could achieve by walking on the same path that he did once.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
I have a short video clip I want to show you. How the Dhamma is transforming lives. Lives come in all sizes. There are big lives, medium-sized lives, little lives. And as I said earlier, the Dhamma is beginning to reach all corners of the world. And I want you to know that you play a big part in that. For instance, these sermons wouldn't be done if you were not here. That is your biggest contribution, being here. I always tell you sometimes I'm impressed by the things I hear in this sermon. Sometimes I go back and listen to that sermon again. Not because I love the sound of my own voice. I mean, any ass likes to hear itself bray, right? But that's not what I'm talking about. Just listening to some of the things that I heard a few minutes ago. Very profound. But that is not one man's doing. A self cannot do any of those things. I mean, you know, all a self can do is harm. Jeez, I don't know where this stuff is coming from. All a self can do is harm. A self can never do any good. So self-harm is what self is. Self is harm. Because the moment self happens, the sense of self happens, now your chitta is in jati. And what ensues? The 11 great fires. Anytime a karma happens in the chitta, that is the moment an abhisankara takes place, which is the blueprint of a sense of self. Self is harm. Self is the most harmful thing to a chitta. It is the most harmful thing to a chitta, self. avidya paccaya sankhara paccaya vijnana paccaya namarupa paccaya salayatana paccaya passa passa paccaya vedana vedana paccaya tanha tanha paccaya upadana upadana paccaya bhava bhava paccaya jati jati is self jati paccaya jara marana shoka parideva dukkha domanassa eva me tassa kevalassa dukkha khandassa samudayo hoti. If that is not harm, tell me what is. Self is harm. So self never did anything good to anyone. It is what stole your peace. It's what nicked it from just under your nose. It stole it just from under your nose. So if self cannot do any good, how can it be myself doing this sermon? Because the self can't do good. The self can only do harm. So it is not I who's doing this. This is the effect of the many causes that are coming together. And I'm not just saying this because I want to eat humble pie in front of you. I'm not pretending to be a nice guy. I don't have to pretend to be that, do I? I'm not trying to be Mr. Nice Guy here. I'm not trying to be so humble. He's so humble. He never accepts any credit for what he does. No, I'm not that kind of person. It is not with that spirit or in that intention I share this with you, ladies and gentlemen. It is the truth. This is the truth. It is not me doing this sermon. Yes, the vibrations are generated here. That is true. But these ideas, they wouldn't come through this if it weren't for all of the causes that are here. These flowers, they have an effect on that. These, they have an effect on that. If this were turned this way around, the sermon would have been a very different one today. Everything is connected. If they hadn't offered me a water, it would have been a different sermon today. If the gentleman who came and invited the Swaminas to deliver the sermon had said something different to what he did when he offered and made the invitation, the sermon would have been a different one. There's no prearranged script somewhere. This is not all pre-planned. This is cause and effect. So there's no one writing the script, right? Here's the next thing that's going to happen. That's not what this philosophy teaches. There are causes. When the right causes align, then there's an effect that manifests. And those causes themselves are determined by yet other causes. Now I know what you're thinking. So what about that first cause? Where did that come from? You will find the answer to that in due course. You want the first course, right? You will find the answer in due course. Please be patient. In the meantime, if you are struggling to be patient, let me help you with that. Because here's the deal. You will only discover what that original cause was once you are free from the longing, the wanting to find out what that cause is. Because if your mind is defiled by wanting, if your mind is defiled by desire, the desire to know, your knowledge will always be limited. If you want to get to limitless knowledge, limitless wisdom, you must become someone who does not thirst for knowledge. Become someone who does not want freedom, and you are free. Who's doing the sermon again? That's what I tell you. I can't take credit for any of this. I don't know where any of this stuff is coming from. Why are people in prisons? In prisons, what do they want to be? What do they want to be? Free. They want to be free. That's why they're not free. Don't you think they should be listening to these words right now? We tried it once. And they said, don't come back. You're here to show the video, right? One moment. We try to teach this wisdom to the prison inmates. I think I got 2 sermons to do with them many moons ago. And I started to explain to them that prison is something you create in your own mind. But here's the deal. Once they realize that, how do you punish them? So if the system is designed to punish the perpetrator, if the system is designed to punish, suppress and oppress, right? Once you teach a man that your punishment is self-made, that your prison is a prison in your own mind, how do you punish them? Why is sticking someone in a dark room a punishment? What do they want? Light. They want to see things. They want to hear things. If from that man you can take away the wanting to see and the wanting to hear, the wanting to listen to things, is it such a bad deal any longer? No, it is no longer a punishment. Isn't self-harm? So I had the opportunity to do 2 sermons. By the end of the 2nd sermon, they said, you need not come back. What can I do? I have to only say the truth. Because the people who were sat down listening to the sermon, they had, you know, their eyes were popping out of their skulls. They were thinking, my God, we've never heard something like this before. I was beginning to explain to them by the 2nd sermon, I think towards the end of that. I said, my dear people, you and I, we live very similar lives except for one thing. See, I don't have to work for a living, neither do you. I get a free meal, you get a free meal. I get free clothes, you get free clothes. I get free medical treatment, you get free medical treatment. I get free housing, you get free accommodation, right? So by virtue of that, do you think it is you who's in the prison or the people outside? Just by virtue of that. So they were beginning to understand, oh yes, I mean, as you have a point then. But then I said, so despite you being furnished by all of these requisites, by all these comforts, right, and the taxpayer paying for you to be here as well and all that good stuff, so you don't even have to work a day, what's the problem? What's your problem? He says, Swami, but we want to get out. We want to be out of here. Why? I asked him, why? Why do you want to be out of here? Because this is prison. Says who? If 4 walls around you is prison, then so is this. I said, is it not prison because you want to see something other than what your eyes can see right now? You want to know what's on the other side of that wall, don't you? That's why you consider yourself to be in prison. What if I can teach you that what's on the other side is just the same as this? Just as much as this is of no value, what's on the outside is also of no value. Then you can see, but you don't want to see. If you can see, but you don't want to see, how do you How do you incarcerate someone like that? How do you imprison someone like that? How can you punish someone who doesn't want to see? I said, my dear people, you are unhappy right now because you want to hear things. You want to listen to the radio. You want to hear what's going on outside. You want to go to the carnivals. You want to hear the music, right? But what if I could teach you that just as much as what you're hearing right now is of no value, meaning the sounds that you hear, it's the same on the outside. These sounds don't bring you pleasure. Those sounds don't bring you pleasure either, because pleasure is not something that is in the sound. It is not something that is in sight. It is not something that is in sound. Then where is it? In taste? It's not in taste. It is not in smell. Then what are you looking for? Why do you want to now go out? And then they began to realize that they were getting the better end of the deal. They were beginning to realize it was far better to be in prison. Right? Because they get a free meal, which you don't get. They get free accommodation, which you don't get. You had to pay your mortgage, they don't. They get free medical treatment, which you don't get. And they get free clothes, which you don't get. These are the four requisites that sustains life. They get all that for free. The only problem they had was that they wanted to know what was happening on the other side of the wall. And the Dhamma was the panacea. Is it any wonder then, by the second sermon, they said, Swaminas, you need not come back. No, honestly, because if they'd allowed us to continue with those series, with the series of talks, very soon they would have to resort to torture. They would. Why so? There would be no other way of punishing them. A man who wants to be in prison is not someone who's in prison. He's only in prison because he doesn't want to be there. Wasn't that how you felt when you were just on the verge of getting that divorce? Just before you got the divorce and you split up. Did you not feel that you were in prison? But the day you got married, you didn't feel like that. See, it all depends on what you want. So, isn't wanting your prison? Isn't your desire, your wanting something, the construct of your prison? Aren't they the four walls of your prison? Isn't that the cell that you stick yourself in? You stick yourself in, ladies and gentlemen. No one can put you in that cell. No one can imprison you in the prison of attachment. It is because of your ignorance you don't realize that. That's why when the Buddha teaches the Dhamma, you realize that this is a prison that you walked into yourself. And the moment you realize that, you walk out of it. Believe you me, this prison cell that you're in right now, the door is open. You think it's locked. The door is open. Open, ladies and gentlemen. Just give the door a bit of a nudge and you'll realize that what I'm saying is true. Just give it a nudge. It'll open wide with a creaking sound because it's never been opened before. Do it. Trust me, take my word and just take a leap of faith. If you can't understand the Buddha's teaching, at least take a leap of faith. Just give it a bit of a kick. Just a slight kick. And the door will open wide. And then you'll be able to walk out. But you are inside screaming and shouting and crying because you think the prison door is shut and locked. And you think that someone else has the key. That's why you get down on one knee and say, please, can you give me the key? That's why you go to your boss and say, please, at the end of the year, can you give me a key if I behave well? If I meet all those objectives, if I hit all those targets, please will you give me the key and open my prison cell for me? Once you are empowered with the Dhamma, why should you beg, borrow and steal your happiness from someone else? In this video, you will see a young life. A young life who has been gifted and blessed with the Dhamma. I want you to watch this video, ladies and gentlemen, and ask yourselves this question. If she can. If she. Because often you say he. But if she can. Yes? Why? Why can't I? That's what it. This is a future Anagarika. So how old do you think she must be then?
Terasanai.
Terasanai.
22.
Yeah.
What's going on?
I'm here to explain a point which is called cause and effect.
Oh, if you didn't know that. You can explain, thank you.
Okay. Like cause and effect in your name first, and then it'll be a bit more advanced.
Okay.
That part's a surprise.
Okay, I can't wait.
I know your name's Pran, so I mean Privacy does, so I'll just write Pran.
Okay.
There.
Mm-hmm.
So, when these letters are in this arrangement, then you'll see it's Pran, right?
Mm-hmm.
And specifically, it has to be these letters, because if we replace a P with C, it'll be them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, my point is, if you get this in a different arrangement, it'll be a totally different effect, even though it's just with the same letters. I'll show you some examples. Okay, see if this is how you spell Pran.
No.
So
I get it. The arrangement is different.
When the arrangement is different, you get a different effect. Yeah, you got my point. Oh, exactly.
I understand.
Now I'll show you the surprise thing I've been designing for you.
And it manifests a different feeling.
Yeah, like when I say your name's Tail, like you get a different meaning, and you kind of get a feeling if someone says your name's Prom, like, well, how dare they call me Prom? And then you feel like to do the same thing. That's what happens when you have when you think you have ownership on the name. Do you want to see the surprise?
Yep.
Okay. Here.
What's that?
Oh, it's a little chart that I'm kind of designed.
Okay.
So, anyway, this piece. Do you think, what color is this?
Blue.
And what is this?
It's a pen.
Okay, let's say that. So, first, do you know the process of seeing stuff?
Kind of, yeah.
Do you want me to explain it a bit
more? Yeah, go ahead and explain, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Anyway, so like that light energy from here needs to go around on this and then go into our eye, like it's over here.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes to the back of our eye.
Yeah.
And then there's RGB colored cells,
mm-hmm.
and neuron cells.
Mm-hmm.
And then those signals go in your brain, an electrical signal.
Mm-hmm.
But in this part, scientists are so fascinated to find out, and they're like, so kind of thinking it's mysterious and horror, like, they're really scared to find, not really scared, but they think it's Hallmark, so, yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, there's more into this that I actually figured out.
What is that?
It may be a bit confusing, but do you wish to
not
see
it? Not you figured out, but not you learn from.
Not I figured out, I mean. Sorry. Like, so I learned it from someone. So I'm going to have to.
Oh,
yeah. I didn't figure it out, but after, like, you said it, I got it, really. That's what I meant by figured out.
Okay.
Of course I'm not the smartest.
That makes sense, yeah.
Anywho,
yeah.
Do you want to see it?
Mm-hmm. That's okay.
So, after that,
mm-hmm.
there's a process of, like, the energy, like, the mind, like, gets made. So, like, so it's called Rupa first. It's like Rupa Vedana Sanya Samkara Vinyana.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
what are they?
Oh, so that, it's like kind of like dominoes, but so, like, when they like fall on each other, you know when the last one falls, like when it's in a pattern?
Mm-hmm.
Like when the last one falls, the pattern gets complete, right?
Yes.
Kind of like that, when the last one falls, the mind gets made, and then you get the perception. This is a blue. You get the thought that, oh, this is a blue thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I like it, or I don't like it.
Okay. Like the decision or the judgment.
Yeah, the judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can get a good word for that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so then the mind. So you think the mind gives you those judgments, right?
I would think so.
Actually, no. It's called ignorance. It's it's actually the evil thing here. The mind is totally innocent. It's the ignorance which is making you think bad of others and stuff. For example, ew, I don't like this thing. It's the ignorance. Like, it's not really the mind. The mind's just a cute little innocent. Not cute, but just not harmful.
Yeah.
So ignorance is like when you get bad judgments of people, or like, not bad.
6 or 7 years of age. And she's been listening to the sermons from as far as she can remember, going all the way back, listening to how we explain the mind, Rupa, Veda. You heard her, right? Sometimes she can't even pronounce some of those words properly. But she says that the mind is a very harmless thing. It's ignorance that is the problem. Did you know that when you were 6? What did you know when you were 6? Let's not talk about that, huh? See, if this child continues at this rate, do you think at 12 years of age, 6, 7 years from now, do you think any old guy would be able to come up to her and fool her and tell her that he's going to give her the happiness that she's always wanted in life? Do you think she's ever going to fall for a Prince Charming? Like you once did. If she continues at this rate and her parents are able to provide that wholesome environment for her, noble association, she's already said that she wants to become an Anagarika. But of course, now they're still in New Zealand. So every time Mahindahandro and Bakulahandro and them visit, It's like a field trip and they go there. She's like an ambassador of the Dhamma. She talks to her friends, her family, and explains the Dhamma to them. So when they have like play time, she'll take some time to explain the Dhamma to her friends at 6 years of age. You know, chittas don't have an age, ladies and gentlemen. You don't have young chittas and old chittas. Your chitta right now is a brand new chitta. These chittas of a 6-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 1-year-old, a 1-day-old is just the same. It's just a chitta. The difference is they don't have enough memory. They don't have knowledge that they've acquired. You have a lot of knowledge you've acquired. Your experience is that. So you know what to do in a particular situation. You know that before you cross the street, you have to look right, left and right again. These chittas, they don't have access to that knowledge. That is why over time, we keep putting knowledge into their memory. And once they learn how to harness that knowledge, that is when you call them an adult. But that is what maturity should be. But think about how young children become adults today. How they mature today. That's not real maturity. If a child does not understand the value of their parents, if a child does not understand that drugs does harm to them, if a child does not understand how evil ignoble association is, how disastrous ignoble association is, then how have they matured at all? If they don't understand how to be sensitive towards another person, how to be kind and gentle towards another person, if they haven't been given those indoctrinations, that knowledge, then why did their life mature in the first place? What was the point of it? Why did they grow old in the first place? Wasn't that simply a waste of resources? Just think about it, ladies and gentlemen. If there's a child, right, any life consumes natural resources, right? This is energy that we have around us. We consume that. Just imagine if a child grew up in an unwholesome environment, surrounded by ignoble people, bad people, vile and vicious people, who constantly put toxic stuff, intoxicate those minds. By the time the child reaches the age of puberty, by the time a child reaches adulthood, 20, 25, 30, what you have is a living, breathing, walking disaster. It's a tragedy. These are the kind of lives other people wish never came into this world. That's when you have people cursing their parents. You may have heard sometimes people cursing parents of children who do more harm than good. But it's not the children's fault, is it? If you are what you have eaten, right? If your bodies are what you have eaten, then what are your minds? What you have assimilated. It's what the people around you have put into it. Now what do you think this child's parents are putting into this child's mind? Pure Dhamma. The Buddha's teaching, the doctrine of pure happiness, unconditional happiness. See, if a parent takes responsibility to do that with the child, I believe that these parents need not be worried that one day she's going to fall for someone's word. She's going to fall into a trap, a honey trap. I believe that these parents need not worry that someone's going to come and fool her and promise her the world and take away her innocence. But that's what's happening to many young girls out there. The whole world is being promised to them. And in exchange for what? What you and I call their innocence. You love your children like a flower. That's how you protect them. They are the apple of your eye. They're the most precious thing to you, I understand. You want to see them bloom and blossom and spread its fragrance and beauty to the world. But if you don't give a child the Dhamma, which is why I keep banging on about this from time to time, if you don't give your children the Dhamma, ladies and gentlemen, soon enough, there'll be more thorns on that flower than fragrance and beauty. There'll be more thorns on it. So much that even you will not be able to come close to it. That little flower that today you hold in your hand, and you caress, and you embrace, and you show and cover and give love. If you don't make sure that your child has noble association, the Dhamma, then soon enough there'll be more thorns than fragrance. You will not be able to reach your child. There are many parents who walk through our gates and lament. They lament and say, Swami Nuhan said, I don't know where it went wrong. I thought I was going to become the best mother in the whole world. And it is with that ambition I brought these two, three, four, however many children into this world. But today, this is how my daughter treats me. She treats me like a dog. My son has kicked me out of the house. He tells me, if you brought me into this world, now look after me. It was not my choice, it was your choice. This is what happens when you don't give your children the Dhamma. Because all they are concerned about there is their vexations. Of course, when there is a self, how can you concern or consider about anything else? Because the self hijacks your chitta. It hijacks the chitta. The sense of self hijacks the chitta, and now self is harm. You can't help it after that. As I keep saying, ladies and gentlemen, there are no such thing called bad people. Badness gets people. All we can do is to inoculate people. Inoculate them against badness. You know, when the corona pandemic hit, right, they inoculated people, didn't they? So that they wouldn't contract the disease. When you're younger, you get these inoculations. So you don't contract the diseases. That's what you have to do with children. Because when they're young, their minds are like sponges. They'll absorb whatever is put in there. If you put in good stuff, it'll take the good stuff. If you put in bad stuff, it'll take in the bad stuff. As parents, your biggest and greatest responsibility, if you have decided to bring a life into this world, your greatest responsibility, your number one responsibility to your child is to ensure that you give them the inoculation of Dhamma. You have to. It's not your choice after you've chosen to bring a child into the world. Then it's no longer your choice. Because if you don't do that, people will say that your womb was merely a cesspit. Not me. People will. They'll curse your womb. As many people in the world curse the parents of the children who, in their footsteps, spell harm, disaster to everyone they come across. This is why such things are very important. This is why I wanted to show you this video clip. Not merely to show you what a child has been able to do with the Dhamma, but also to think about who's behind the camera. That was an effect, wasn't it? In the camera you saw an effect. What was one of the biggest causes? Where was it? Behind the camera. She was saying, I learned this from Swami Mahansi. She was holding a blue pen and up and asking, this is a blue pen. Right? Later on in the sermon, she goes on to explain that the blueness is not in the pen. So then how can anyone fool her by giving her a blue diamond? Now you see, the father and the mother of this child need not worry that one day someone's going to give them a blue diamond, a blue sapphire, and say, here, if you want this, can you do this for me? A favor for a favor. See, we have to set free these children from the prisons that they have built for themselves. They were born imprisoned. It is our task to free them. It is your task to free them. It is your task to free your child and free yourself as well. That is what the Dhamma is for. I'm very happy for you because you have come a long way, and I know that when I say these words, I'm not just flattering you. I think you understand that. That's why I said, from being conventional Buddhists to who you are today, ladies and gentlemen, give yourselves a pat on the back. Today you chant the Namaskara with profound meaning. Just from that which you utter at the start of a sermon, you chant the Namaskara with profound meaning. You understand what the Buddha is, then it matters not to you who the Buddha is. So if someone comes up to you and says, you know, the Buddha, he wasn't born in India. He was born in Argentina. Is that a problem to you anymore? He was not born under the Bodhi tree, he was born under an apple tree. Does that bother you? It would bother you if you're more concerned about who the Buddha is rather than what the Buddha stands for. Someone says, no, he was not born a prince to the royal palace. He was born a beggar. If you're more concerned about who the Buddha is or who the Buddha was, then you'd be very insulted and offended. How dare they insult my religious leader? Come in front of me and say the worst things you can about the Buddha and see whether I'll bat an eyelid. Because I have understood the Buddha. I have realized the Buddha. You can't offend me. Because to me, the Buddha is not someone. It is an ideal. It's an aspiration. It's Nibbana. It's wisdom. It's knowledge. It's the fount of all wisdom. It's infinite compassion. It's limitless mercy. It's having the ability to absorb anything. It's to be magnanimous. It's to be tolerant. It's to be forgiving and understanding. And to come down to someone's level so that you can help them come up to your level. It's that. Now can you insult the Buddha? Not with me. Try the next shop. This is where I see you. I want you to come with us on a very different kind of journey, ladies and gentlemen. I don't want you to be average people. Perhaps we were born average. But if our lives are well lived, we don't need to die average. Your good merits have brought you here to elevate you from average to extraordinary. Then become that. We are here to help. The Mahasangha is here to help. The Mahasangha will show you an evidence, give you evidence of that next week. That's why I have made it a determination not to get involved in any of the programs next week. With a bit of luck, you probably won't even see me. for no other reason than to convince you that it is not I who is your spiritual guide. It's not I. It's the community. See, even though we don't have the Buddha today, the Mahasangha is still guiding you, right? So wouldn't the Buddha have said the same thing? If the Buddha can say that about himself, then what about a tiny little puny little thing like me? Am I your spiritual guide? Am I your spiritual, I don't know, am I your savior? I'm not. The Dhamma is your savior. I don't want to give you something and then say, hang your hat of happiness on this hook, knowing that soon enough that hook will fall. So I can't be in my sane mind tell you that I am going to be your savior. I am going to be your guide. Believe in me, come with me. I'll save you all. I can't say that because I know that one day I'm going to leave you or you're going to leave me. Then where do you go? You're lost. And then you'll have to wait until the next one comes along. Oh, I'll come back again. I don't plan on coming back again. Then, particularly if I have no plan on coming back again, should I not give you something that is self-sufficient, that helps you become self-sufficient? If I have no intention of coming back? So make use of the Mahasangha. Inculcate those qualities within yourselves so that you can become a representative of the Mahasangha. Which you are. But there's more we can do because the qualities of the Mahasangha are infinite. So I have, with a bit of luck, as I say, if next week, I won't be seeing you. No, you probably will see me. Just come and say hi and go. But our Swamin Mahan says, our Anagarika Mahatmyas and our Anagarika Mahatmyas, they'll look after you. Because they love you just as much as I do. Honestly, they do. So come. Experience what your good merits can do for you. Enjoy a taste of paradise. This side of Nibbana, I can't think of a better place to be. Lastly, before I wrap up, I want to invite a special guest that I brought along with me today. Can you bring him in? He's still learning to speak fluently in English. So I said, it's okay, Puta, you can say what you want to say in Sinhala. Let me not spoil it. Let's see what he has to say. No spoilers. All I've told him is, Puta, I'm going to take you to Colombo today because he's been particularly good. He's been very well behaved and he's a shining example to a lot of his brothers at the monastery. And so I wanted to give him a bit of a treat by bringing him in today. And then I asked him, so if I ask you to come up and say a few words, would you mind? He said, Kocharala Hatakano. Say, Vinanipa. So, 5 minutes of let's see what we have to hear. End of that. Puta, Theravansan. මේ නන්දලයි මාමලට යෝනලු පුතා කවුද කියලා දැනගන්න. තා පුතා ඇයි ආරාමයට ආවේ කියලා දැනගන්න. ආරාමයට ඇවිල්ලා පුතා මොනවද ඉගෙන ගත්තේ? සහ පුතා මොනවද කරන්න හිතාගෙන ඉන්නේ කියලා මේ නන්දලටයි මාමලටයි කියන්න. පුතයි 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 ආරාමයට ආවේ කියලා
කියන්නේ.
පුතා පුතාගේ පුතාගේ යාළුව ගැන මොනවද කියන්නේ? පුතත් එක්ක නෝ බල හට්ටක ඉන්න. පුතා නිවන් දකින්න ආසයිද? ඇයි පුතා නිවන් දකින්නවාසේ? ඇයි පුතා නිවන් දකින්නවාසේ? මේ නන්දලට කියන්නේ ඇයි නිවන් දකින්න ඕනේ කියලා. නන්දලටයි මාමලට එන්න කියන ආරාමයට ඇවිල්ලා පුතා බලන්න කියලා. නන්දලටයි මාමලට එන්න කියන ආරාමයට. පුතා පුතාලවත් එක්කගෙන එන්න කියන. කියන්න කියන්න මං කිව්වට එන්නේ නැහැ. Now what's your excuse? A 7-year-old has told you what to do. Are you in any doubt where these lives will be over the next 10, 15, 20 years? Just imagine, if at the age 7, these children are like this, by the time they come to my age, they'll have become fearless warriors. Fearless. Fearless warriors of the Dhamma. I want all of you to rejoice, ladies and gentlemen, not simply of what you have witnessed today, but once again, this is an effect. This is an effect. Like I showed you the video earlier and I said that was the effect. One of the biggest causes is behind the camera. Here, what you saw was an effect. all of us are helping transform and build these lives so that they can go on to achieve the greatest potential that they're capable of. It takes a whole village to raise a child. This is that village. I can only impart on him the Dhamma, values, virtues and so on. You make sure that he has a meal. He has a cup of tea in the morning. You make sure of that. You make sure that he has a dormitory in which he has a bed. You make sure that he has a school in which he has books and stationery. There are those among you who every quarter, every school term, you come to the school at the monastery and you donate. I'm sharing this with you so that you can all rejoice in these things. There are some among you, every school term, you come to the school and they make a donation of all the stationery that is required for the school. The exercise books and the stationery and so on. There are those among you who have come forward to teach these children languages. Sometimes you teach their teachers and then in turn their teachers teach them. These are things that you all do. You need not think about who it is who does that, because there is no who. If the Buddha is not a who, are you a who? No, I'm not sharing with you people, I'm sharing with you purpose. I'm sharing with you motives. I'm sharing with you what people do, the what's that are done. Don't worry about who does it. When the Jetavanarama was offered 2,500 years ago, it mattered not that the man who put his palms together and said a sadhukara had not raised a finger to build the actual monastery. But all he did was rejoice in the offering, and he was rewarded far more than the actual person who actually did all the hard work, toil, to build the actual monastery. See, merit is not in the activities that you do. It's in the mind. That is why I share these stories with you. Look at all this. Look at all this for a second. Look at the effort that's gone into making this place a really wonderful and amazing place where you can come and listen to the Dhamma in peace and comfort. Just think about all the things that people do to make your stay here as comfortable as can be. They lay the chairs out for you when you come in. They give you a refreshment so that you are refreshed. They make sure the toilets are clean and there's water to drink. They put the board up here. They make sure the air conditioners work. They make sure the microphone works. They make sure that Swami Nuhase has a cup of water to drink in case he gets thirsty. Because if he doesn't get the drink of water, how can he do the sermon? Never think about who it is who does that. Rejoice in the goodness that happens. Do you ever heard what the girl said to the mother? Her mother's name is Pramudita, so she calls herself Pram. She said, Amma, there's no owner to this name. There's no owner to the name. It's just a combination, just an arrangement. But when you think that it is an entity, now you assign an owner to it and create an ownership. So the goodness that I'm sharing with you, the good deeds that are done, who's the owner? Who's the owner? There are no owners. There are no owners. So someone holds the mutukuda. When the Swami Nuhansi leaves, when the Swami Nuhansi arrives, someone holds the mutukuda. Ladies in the room, I ask you, should the mutukuda be in your hand for you to rejoice in it? Should it? Do you somehow feel underprivileged or discriminated as a woman that you don't get the opportunity to hold the mutukuda? Then that is yourself. That is yourself that's harming you. Put the self aside, and now all you will see is such goodness is happening in this world. Sadhu, sadhu is what you will hear. That is what you will feel in your mind. You will rejoice in it. See, self is always harm. Put the self to aside and witness and experience and enjoy, rejoice in the goodness that is happening. So why does it matter who carries the mutukuda? Why does it matter who lays down the pavada? Why does it matter who comes here and offers the betel leaves and makes invitation to the Swami Nohansi? Why does it matter? I've noticed something that you all do. This is not discussed with me, but I'm picking that this is something that you try and make it a point to do, especially if there's someone new in the audience. I've usually seen when the Swami Nohansi walks in, you either give them the flowers or you give them the opportunity to come and invite them for the sermon. Because it matters not to you that it is you who has to do it, as long as it is done. And it's a good thing that is done. You rejoice in it. As I said, give yourselves a pat on the back, because that requires a profound level of wisdom to be able to see the world in that way. Because people don't, the average person doesn't see the world in that way. Because they're so obsessed with self, and all good things must happen to me, any bad thing must happen to people other than me. That is the self-obsessed world in which we live. I don't mean the world out there. I mean the world in your heart. So free yourself from yourself. Free yourself from yourself. And there you will find eternal bliss. So rejoice in all the merits. Whenever you come to the monastery, now next week we will be at the monastery, you will see how devoted our Anagarikas are, our Anagarikas are, and our Swami Nohansis are to look after you. Rejoice in all that. Not because it is you they serve. Don't think about that. Let's just say three people are stood in front of you in the queue, right? You're walking up there to be served lunch. And you can see that in the containers they only have rice for two people. So you know that by the time you are there, there will no longer be any more food to serve you. The self-obsessed cannot rejoice in that. Because here's what they'll be thinking. Damn it. If only I'd come 2 minutes before. If only I'd turn up or join the queue 2 minutes before, I would have had that. But now, I have to stand aside and just look at someone else being served. See? Don't you see that there's an opportunity lost there? See, the Anagarika Mahatya might be serving the rice. Okay? That is a dana. What about if it's you in the queue who, with profound understanding, can actually watch that? And as rice is being served, as food is being served onto the plates, you rejoice in that dana. Then it matters not who got served and who didn't get served. Because although your stomach is not full, your mind is full. You are what you eat, after all. You are what you eat. So witness all that. Experience it. As the Swami Nohansis will take every effort to try and explain the Dhamma to you. I'd watch them from time to time, like switch out, come out of the actual environment and observe what's going on from time to time. That they'll take example after the next, one after the other. They'll try to explain. They'll take whatever they can find around them. They'll take the bottle, they'll take a book, they'll take a pen, they'll take whatever they can find around them and try and help you apply the Dhamma into everyday life. Just step outside of that situation and look at it for a second and just look at how devotedly, how committed they are to serve you. Actually, I correct that. To serve. And rejoice in it. give a sadhukara, and then get back into the situation. Step in and out from time to time and just witness that. When you see the Anagarika Mahatmyas, right, ladies in the room, when you look at them, you tell me if there's anyone in that in the Anagarika Rama who's not good enough, who's not good looking enough to be given away in their hand in marriage. They're all very respectable young ladies who've come from respectable families, well educated. They've all come looking for one truth. Their parents didn't give them up because they couldn't give them off in marriage. That's not why they came into this asana. It's not because they couldn't afford a dowry. That's not why they came into this asana. And the more they practice compassion, the more graceful they become. The smiles that they wear on their faces today are not the same smiles they wore when they first came to the Anagarika Rama. We have seen that transformation. Today they have a smile of a mother. I witnessed that. If you look attentively, you will notice that. Today, Anagarika Mahatmyas, when they smile, I see the smile of a mother. Motherly love. Because that is what Guru Hamra teaches us to do. Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam. Be a mother to the whole world. Be a father to the whole world. Ayusa Ekaputta Manurakhe. You have heard this from the Karaniyamata Sutra. As a mother protects her only child. Love all sentient beings. Now that is not a selfish love, is it? This is the sasana. Come and reap your rewards. Come and pluck your fruit while you still can. Because as all good things, this will also come to an end. Just like the seasons, the sasana has a time when it blossoms and blooms. And then there comes the autumn. And just like the red orange leaves will fall off the trees, men and women who walk wearing crimson, red and orange, will start falling onto the earth. And then it will be a very long time before it's spring again. Right now, it's spring. So spring into action. Make hay while the sun shines. Right. Let's transfer the merits and bring the sermon to a close. On the 22nd September, which is the day after the elections, we have decided not to hold the sermon. For obvious reasons, I suppose. Because although you are a transformed human being, the world must continue. And what people will have to do, people will have to do. Right? So, of course, as a citizen, you have a right and an obligation to elect the rulers of this nation. You do what you have to do as a citizen. But always make sure that you do it in a peaceful way. The main reason being, your lives are very valuable. They're very precious. Particularly now that you have understood the Dhamma. So don't get engaged in unnecessary confrontations. Don't get involved in unnecessary hoo-has and all that. Let people, you know, let the dogs bark. And then let the donkeys bray. You are better than that. You do what you have to do. You do your obligation. You fulfill your responsibility to your country, to your people, to your nation. And then mind your own business. What is your business? Nibbana. So the 22nd, there will be no sermon. As well as the 21st, which is a Saturday, we won't have a sermon at the monastery. So those 2 days will give you time off. Pot plants. Can I just quickly say something, because I feel it's important that I clarify this. Now, brief moment ago, I said that there are those among you who look at what we need at the monastery, what the children need, what the Swami Mahasis need, and so on, and do what you can to support them. Two things. First, that is not me trying to manipulate you to cough up. Please don't think of me like that. That would be the greatest insult that you can bring upon the Sangha Bhansa. All I wanted to do was to share with you what good the people do so that you can rejoice in them. Because when you rejoice in them, you earn just as much merits in your heart as the amount of merits, or if not even more, than the person, like the person or as the person that offered them. So it is not in any way suggesting that you must do the same. Because I feel that all of you, if you have understood the Dhamma, you will do what you can do. Do I need to invite you to look after your mother? To feed her? Do I need to do that? Do I have to remind you that your mother is ill and you need to give her her medicines, keep her home and look after her and wash her? If you are someone who has understood the value of a mother, you needn't have anyone tell you how to look after your mother, right? I believe the same goes for the sasana. Those who have benefited from the sasana does not need an invitation. Secondly, when I from time to time share some of these things with you, there may be those of you in the sermon right now, there may be those who listen to this later on, and you know that it is you I might be referring to. That is not to say that I am now tying you down with that obligation of having to do it from here on for the rest of your life. Just think about what I have to think about when I say things, because I don't want you to feel that you are now obliged to do it from here on. That is not what I am suggesting. So, for instance, I said that there are some among you who every school term, you come to the monastery and you collect among with your friends. There's a group of people who do that. And they make a stationary donation to the school. That is not in any way suggesting that they have to do it from here on. So don't feel that just because Swami Nansi said it, now I have to do it every time. Because people have that sort of tendency to think that, you know, when someone appreciates them, now they are obliged to do it from here on. There's no baggage here. Because it is not you in the future anyway. Right? I'm talking about the chitta that did it. So there's no obligation to do anything. What you have understood from the sasana, like I said, I don't need to invite you to look after your mother. If you know what you have got from your mother, then you will look after your mother. Those of you who have gained something from the sasana, to whatever extent you have, to that extent, like I said the other day, feed the goose that lays the golden egg. Feed the goose that lays the golden egg. Don't worry about the egg. Because if you feed the goose, many more eggs like this will follow. You will have plenty of eggs where this came from. So don't think of Swami Nuhansa. This Swami Nuhansa is just one egg. See, there's another egg there. That's another golden egg. What do you think laid that egg? A golden goose. Another goose. And this is the golden egg. I'm referring to the sasana. Right? So, from time to time, I'll tell you about the good things that people do for the sasana. All I want you to do is rejoice in them. There are those who support at the school there's a computer laboratory. From time to time, There are those among you who make a donation to the computer, so you give the students have an IT lab to work with, because we give those skills to our children as well, so that they can learn how to edit these videos, so that they can go online, so that people can watch them and rejoice in them and listen to the Dhamma. We teach our young children how to use a video camera, so that they can record a sermon, how to edit them, how to filter out the noise of an audio recording, so that even if a sermon was done in a noisy background, they can filter out the noise and save the recording and salvage the recording, put it online so that someone can listen to it. Don't you think that's what knowledge should be used for? So when they learn it, they need some technology to do that. And there are those among you who make such donations. I will share these things from time to time. It is not to tie you down with an obligation. Okay? It's simply so that everyone can rejoice in it. Is that fair? Did you all understand? Thank you. All right. Let's do the minute transfer and bring the sermon to a close. Let us all take a moment then to transfer all the merits that we have acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Chain, listening to the Dhamma and inviting the Swami Master to deliver the sermon, as well as creating a conducive environment for all to practice the teaching and to attain to the ultimate bliss of Nibbana. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are and transfer these merits out of gratitude to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, who have since time immemorial protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to all the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries and throughout the world, including the Mahanayakas and the Anunayaka theras of all the chapters who represent the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to Guru Swami Mahansa, as well as all the monks and all the monks resident at the monastery and the Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these talks, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer these merits to our devotees and friends of the monastery, who for the sake of merits to help them attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as pass on their know-how and continue to extend their well wishes. May they all rejoice in these merits. By the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our friends and our acquaintances, our employers and our employees and our teachers, as well as our friends and those who've gone the extra mile on our behalf, who've left no stone unturned to help make our lives as comfortable as can be. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to all of them, and by the power of these merits, may they all be freed from any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the devas and brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who have committed themselves to protect and preserve the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us transfer these merits to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our forefathers, our loved ones, those who passed away in our name, our ancestors, reminding ourselves that it is in their blood, sweat and tears today we are able to enjoy the comforts of life and practice the path in peace and harmony. Let us transfer these merits to members of the armed forces who sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation, as well as those who lost their lives to the wars, be their friend or foe. Let us transfer these merits to those who lost lives in natural calamities and disasters, such as the tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, fires, floods, pandemics and so on. Reminding ourselves that it is in this infinite long journey of samsara, they will all have been mothers and fathers to us, friends to us, supporters, and those who will have done whatever they could to help us live a happy and wholesome life with a sense of gratitude and compassion towards all of them. Let us transfer all the merits that we have acquired to them. May by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful planes, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May by the power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land. And may finally you and I and everyone who has helped make this program a success become a Rahatan Mahanse or an Arahat Theranin Mahanse in this very life itself and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. Members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you.
Raga ginnan midatnva, dvesha ginnan midatnva, moha ginnan midatnva, nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatma, nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatma, mamada siyalu loka siyalu satvayo, nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatma, nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatma, nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatma. Raga gini niveva, dvesha gini niveva, moha gini niveva, nivan sapa labeva, nivan sapa labeva, nivan sapa labeva. Thunruvange suvisi ananta maha guna belen silu loka silu satyavama nibbana parama sukhen sukhita taravetva. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.